Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and if everything you knew about Black American families was based solely on what the national news media reported, what would you be likely to think? Despite what government data overwhelmingly shows, Black families in the media are shown as overwhelmingly poor, reliant on welfare, are criminals, and absentee fathers. That's according to a recent report by Color of Change, a racial justice organization, and Family Story, an advocate of diverse family arrangements. Joining me now to discuss the findings of the report and how stereotypes of Black families impact public policy are Travis Dixon, media effects scholar and professor of communications at the University of Illinois, and Rashid Shabazz, Color of Change, chief marketing and storytelling officer. Thanks, both of you, for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian, for having us on.
So the report documents how news and opinion media outlets systematically and inaccurately portray Black families as more poor, more criminal, and more unstable than white families. Travis, you conducted the research for the study. Can you give us the scope of what you were looking at? What sorts of media outlets were you examining? And since this is not a new thought, what question were you trying to answer right now?
Well, thank you again for having us. I wanted to say that we were trying to be as comprehensive as we could be with regards to the sources. So we started off by trying to go after and think about national broadcasts. So that included CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, so the cable networks, as well as the broadcast networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC. And then we also considered newspapers and blogs that had national prominence, including the New York Times and the Washington Post. And then we also wanted to look at local outlets or newspapers as well. And so we essentially looked at the four regions of the country and randomly selected newspapers. And when we put this together, we drew from a number of resources, including the Klein Center for Democracy here at the University of Illinois, the UCLA Archive of Television News, and other kind of news databases to try to draw the sample. The last thing, though, that's also important in terms of the sampling is that we included opinion media, including ideological media like Breitbart and some Christian news websites as well. And that's because at first it may seem, why would we do that? But one of the things that we thought about was that increasingly people are turning to these ideological sites for their primary news sources. So we thought it was important to also include them. And our goal was to try to get a large enough sample to be able to look at what the patterns were overall and try to do a few intermediate comparisons as well. We ended up with about 800 stories, over 800 stories in the sample. And so that was kind of our first goal here in terms of being comprehensive, and those are the sources that we're looking at.
Uh-huh, that's really broad. And I see the report found that 59% of poor families were depicted in the news media as Black, even though only 27% of families living below the poverty line are Black in this country. Rashid, can you give us a few examples of the types of things you were seeing when examining the media landscape along those lines?
Yes, thank you again, Brian, for having us on. I want to thank Travis and also our partners, Family Story, for partnering with us on this report. And to your point about some of the findings that we were seeing was that, for example, with CNN's portrayal of poor families, we saw them at a higher ratio than even, say, Fox in terms of how they were representing families. And to the point around the media overrepresentation and association between Black families and just how they are portrayed against the idea around criminality, but when we look at white families, the association was a lot lower. And so what we're seeing is that despite the reality that Black families are not in the same level of poverty as white families or just the things that Travis was just highlighting, we're finding that the media presents white families as models of stability while underrepresenting the extent to which white families actually are struggling, which when we look at the news cycle, we're seeing, again, the portrayal of Black families continually being represented in ways that are just inaccurate. but more importantly, detrimental to the fact that a lot of these policies and information that's out there in terms of legislation is being driven by biases that we're seeing both in the media and driven through television primarily as well.
Another major one from the report, I don't know which of you wants to take this one, is how the media misrepresents who commits a crime. Who wants to go into that?
I can go into that a little bit. That's something that I've spent a lot of time thinking about and writing about over the years. And historically, I've looked at kind of individuals who are misrepresented as criminals, particularly African-Americans being overrepresented as criminals and whites being overrepresented in more supportive roles. And so we found that in the literature before. What's really interesting about this study is that we started with looking at families first, right? So we were first asking the question about, well, how are families just represented, both white and black families? And what we did was we looked at whether or not family members were associated with any criminal activity. And again, we found the same kind of overrepresentation of African Americans with criminality when we did that. We essentially found that African Americans tended to be overrepresented as criminals compared to crime reports and arrest records, and that's something that comports with other studies that we've done in the past. So it was disturbing that in this context of family, these things get invoked. And it's not just crime. I mean, that's one of the interesting things. We haven't talked about fatherhood yet, but, you know, you could say you're talking about an issue, you're talking about, let's say you're talking about Black Lives Matter, or you're talking about police brutality or something like that more broadly. What's interesting is that on some of these shows, pundits would just start interjecting, oh, well, yeah, the real problem is absentee black fathers. Right? Like right. All the problems in the black community are tied to that. So that's one of the interesting things about the study is that even when we begin to talk about families, we go into these quote-unquote kind of dysfunctions that are laid on the black community.
Well, is there
and
a
black
flip,
families specifically.
Is there a flip side to this, Rashid, which is while the percentage nationally, I mean, while the total numbers nationally of all these things are more white, the rate within black communities for many of these dynamics is higher, and rate matters to the accuracy of reporting. Even that racial justice activists will point to some of the same disparities in rates of poverty, rates of incarceration, as evidence of social inequalities that need to be addressed by public policy.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. I think the primary focus of the report, and just to Dr. Travis's point, is just that it's really important to focus on the ways in which the media disproportionately is pushing and propagating negative stereotypes. Whether or not it's the percentages and race that we're talking about, I think the important things that outlets are really need to consider how they need to revise and think about certain standards and protocols when reporting on families as it relates to race-related issues. And I think for our work, particularly at Color Change, when we think about racial justice and we think about the issues and the campaigns that we're supporting, whether or not that's trying to get individuals like Glenn Beck or Bill O'Reilly off the air, or working on other issues, I think the primary thing that one of the things that I think really interested that Travis just mentioned earlier was the fact that a lot of the information that individuals are getting from the news cycle at this moment are from right-wing news sources. And I think when we look at the exploitation of those news choices in this environment, I think we need to just be very careful when we're talking about the types of race and the percentages that we're talking about. So while I think that may be somewhat true, I think the more important factor here is just, again, there's a long history to the point you raised earlier, Brian, that there's a system here in place that can continue to proportionately misrepresent African-American families.
We're talking about the new report on stereotypes of black families as represented in the media with media effects scholar and professor of communication at the University of Illinois, Travis Dixon, and Rashid Shabazz, Color of Change, Chief Marketing and Storytelling Officer, Color of Change, the racial justice organization. 212-433-WNYC is our phone number. First priority to any African-American listeners who want to reflect on your own observations of how you see yourself, your family, let's say your type of family, represented in the media or not, and the impact you think that has on public policy and on life in general. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. How does it feel to be on the receiving end of this or anything else you want to say? 212-433-9692. And to move to the public policy aspect of it, these aren't just inaccurate portrayals of black families that live in a vacuum. These stereotypes inform public policy. So, Professor Dixon, you were quoted in the report saying, at some point, welfare programs that became associated with benefits enjoyed by white people were not even included in the public discourse about welfare at all. Only programs perceived to be used by black people were part of the welfare discussion, largely within an undeserving framework. Want to give us an example of that?
Absolutely. I think, and there's basically our report is kind of adding a little bit to this literature. And just to kind of give you a context here, earlier work had already shown us by Marty Gillens, a political scientist at Princeton, that essentially the imagery of poverty in our country that the news media was perpetrating was primarily black, right? And that, and this is something he did in the 90s. And so to give you an illustration, if you continue to see a discussion of welfare as essentially getting cash benefit and showing only black people receiving that, even pictures of black people, then the association that gets built up in your mind, in the viewer's mind, is that black people are just lazy and want a handout, and that that's essentially all they care about. And if that is our perception of welfare, then support for welfare goes down because it invokes the stereotype of black laziness. And similarly, in our study, when you're looking at black families, and only time you essentially talk about black families is that if they're poor and on welfare and just kind of living under welfare dependency, then it again perpetuates that same stereotype. And as you may know, or maybe you have already discussed, the president has already signaling his interest in going after entitlement programs such as welfare. And I'm pretty sure that he's going to use this kind of racialized image to promote curbs on federal spending for different kinds of programs that assist the poor. And it will be based on those kinds of stereotypes, most likely. So that's how the policy implication comes about. It's that the narrative is welfare is a tool of liberals to trap black people, and black people have fallen hook, line, and sinker for it. And this is what you see, you hear the pundits saying in the news reports that we looked at, and therefore this dependency is just perpetuated, and therefore we need to kind of cut the programs, right? That becomes a natural extension that we need to then therefore curb all these programs.
And to bring it right to the present moment, I wonder if you see any of this in the new tax bill at all. I tend to suspect that the undercurrent of this, though there wasn't a member of Congress who said it out loud, really, is at least to some degree, hey, people who earn their money should get to keep their money, not have to give it over to the government to transfer to less deserving people. And we know who a lot of white Americans are thinking those less deserving people are.
Absolutely, and I think that that's definitely part of what we're going to see next is, assuming the tax bill goes through, which it looks like it will, is a curve on these programs and all kinds of programs that assist broad swaths of the American people. One of the problems with this is that once you racialize in this way and once you basically promote this ideology that essentially racializes the programs, it causes people almost to forget that all of these different things assist all of us in various ways, and so there are implications for all of us with regards to how much we pay for health care, access to health care. Everyone needs health care, but even health care itself, I would say in the last kind of election cycles, was racialized as well because of Obamacare and seen as a give out to various groups. So whenever we do that, we don't actually look at the policy in terms of its real implications. We look at it through the stereotypical lens. And when we have news media portrayals like this that cause us to look at it through the stereotypical racialized lens, we don't see the full effect, help, and or, you know, we might want to critique programs too, right? But we're not critiquing it from the standpoint of understanding and policy implications. We're critiquing it from our stereotypical lens.
Janine in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Thanks so much for calling.
Hey, Brian, how are you doing?
Good, thank you so much.
This is a great topic, and I have my question is, in the entertainment industry, it makes so much money off of the stories of poverty. If you look at Moonlight, at The Blind Side, you look at the television show This Is Us, it's always making, they always are making narratives where there's a white savior, or even with The Wire, they show how black communities are poor and not able to take care of themselves, where in reality, yes, there is a percentage of a lot of folks who are poor. There are a lot of percentages of people who have actually had a legacy of having some sort of wealth and some suburban upbringing. My parents have been married for over 60 years, and both my brother and sister are landowners, and my parents are as well. It's not that they're rich, it's just that they manage their money well, and we've never been on any public assistance in several generations. My question is, how do we get those stories to sell, not only to other communities, but to communities of color, because it seems like no one really wants to see stories that humanize African Americans and that show us like everyone else dealing with whatever situations that middle class families deal with. How do you recommend that we get these stories told that show some sort of diversity while also honoring the fact that there are a large percentage of people who are living in poverty?
Rashid, want to take that?
Sure. I think there's nothing. First, thank you for the question. I think the first thing that we've noticed and what we're looking at is that it's very important for the representation of the reporters themselves to be reflected in the newsroom. The thing that we've seen is that when we have more representation of diverse voices and individuals who represent both the community and the representation of those that we want to see highlighted, they actually bring a different voice into the newsroom as both editors as well as reporters and writers. I think that's one step. The second step is we really need to allow for education around editors, around false stereotypes, so they're thinking about these broader narratives and not thinking more within the monolith of how African Americans, black families are represented, individuals, just as the person was highlighting in terms of her own family and just how they were able to continue to maintain and grow their family wealth and assets. I think the other thing, this goes to the report finding as well as another report we put out called Race in the Writers' Room, whether it's Hollywood or we're talking about the newsrooms, the showrunners, the individuals, we really need to be in those rooms at the table where decisions are being made and being able to support and ensure that the representation of black people are at a standard that is not, again, the extreme, but that we're actually showing more of a swath of our community that's more diverse and more representative of the diversity of our community. So I think that one of the main things that we can do is actually making sure that the newsrooms as well as the rooms inside the show runners rooms inside Hollywood are reflective of our community.
Janine, thank you very much. Fred in Spring Valley, you're on WNYC. Hi, Fred.
Hi, good morning. I find the research very interesting. I'm excited to learn more about the reports, but I'm interested also in trying to help to promulgate some of this information so that even members of our community who seem to have glommed on to these stereotypes as, you know, as consumers of the same media and somewhat in ways internalize this and use this in ways that, you know, provide even greater strength to notions of patriarchy and so on. I'm thinking especially in terms of the notions of how many women are leading black families and how many children are being raised without the fathers and what that really means and what that really does to destabilize our community. I'm finding this research very, very exciting.
Who wants to take it on with respect to even how members of the community internalize this in a troubling way, which is part of what Fred's getting at?
Sure, I could talk a little bit about that. I would say that there's definitely some truth to that. There's research for that as well. There's something called internalized oppression, where there are times when you can ingest a message about yourself, and that message then is an oppressive message that you then begin to accept. And so there's a lot of work out there that shows that stereotypes can have an impact even if you're a member of the group that's being stereotyped. And it often works through that mechanism of internalized oppression, of having less self-value and worth, and going along with the stereotype in a non-thinking, non-challenging way. If you were to take a step back and be critical, and one of the things that media effects scholars talk about a lot is something called media literacy, where you're trying to critique what's out there and be discriminating as a viewer and talk back to your TV. We used to call it talking back to your TV in the old school days. I know we maybe have to talk back to our devices now because no one's really using TV. But actually you begin to do that, to engage with the content in a critical way. It can begin to essentially delay that effect or mitigate that effect, we believe. And so that's one answer to that issue of thinking about these stereotypes and how you kind of deal with them.
Along that line, could I just ask one other question?
Sure, Fred.
As a father who, you know, I kind of let my daughter watch a little television growing up, and, you know, in her earlier days watching, you know, Little Einsteins or any of the children's programming where there really was a lack of a black or brown or even female characters, irrespective of racial identity, that were leading operations. You know, I used to ask my daughter at breakfast sometimes, why is the little white boy always driving the ship? Can't the little black boy, how come the little Asian girl can't drive? You know, and she would say, well, Daddy, this is just the way it is. And that troubled me. And so I tried to help her to do exactly what you just said, which is talk back and ask questions. Why are things this way and not another, you know, that famous critical question. But what research is there on the lack of black, brown leadership across the spectrum? Let me not just, you know, work with the binaries, but, you know, what research is there to say that, you know, there's a lack of leadership being shown? Therefore, we always think of this particular character in the subservient position or the number two or not, you know, just there's a void. And why is that such?
I would say that there is research on that, and people are beginning to look at that. And I have a colleague who's at UCLA who looked really extensively at both kind of representations behind the camera, in front of the camera, and was able to kind of talk about that in a systematic way, and suggest that there, you know, there's definitely a deficit. I do think there's slow movement. I know that we're being critical of the media, but I want to say that there are different movements within the media to kind of recognize that, to recognize the changing demographics, and to try to bring more diversity. So I think one of the things that we should try to do in a media literacy world is to identify those shows, those characters, those people who are producing both behind and in front of the camera, and promote those images that we like. And what I really commend you for as a dad is doing what we call co-viewing. That's a co-viewing media literacy move you did there, Dad, where you sat there and interrogated, and we call it deconstruction. You deconstructed some of that language in the media for your daughter to say, hey, think about it critically a different way. I have twin 8-year-old African-American boys myself, and I try to spend as much time as I can with them when they're watching something, doing the same thing and saying, hey, what about this? Or, you know, how about this character? Why did that character do this? And that's co-viewing, and that's getting them to think about those images critically. It's really, really important. But there are some good images out there. I don't know if she likes Doc McStuffins. I'm not trying to promote Disney here, but, you know, like as another way of, a central black woman character, and say, hey, what about that image or what have you that you might think is more positive? Push them towards the ones that we like, and say what we should say when the media is doing well, and then say when they're not doing well. I think that's part of talking back too.
Fred, thank you so much. Let's take one more call. Gene in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Gene, we've got about a minute left. Hi.
Yes, hi. Hi, I'm calling because we publish a magazine called The Positive Community, and the idea of the magazine is to help combat that internal oppression that one of your guests was talking about, but also to let other people know and let people in the black community know that we are doing everything that everyone else does to get ahead in America. We are going to school. We are sending their children to school. We work every day. We want to buy a home. We want to buy cars. And those are the things that we promote in our monthly magazine that goes out to churches in New York and New Jersey. And we know that black people want the same things that everybody else wants. And they are getting it through hard work and dedication. So our thing is that the magazine promotes ordinary people doing extraordinary things.
You want to tell people where they can get your magazine?
The magazine is delivered mostly to churches, but they can go on our website, which is www.thepositivecommunity.com, and there's a ton of very exciting news and information about what we are doing in the black community. And by the way, we are supporters of Color of Change and have used some of their content in our magazine.
Thank you so much for calling, Jean. And so, Rashid Shabazz from Color of Change, you're going to get the last word in this segment. We've got about half a minute.
Well, I just want to first thank the last caller for, one, being a supporter of our work. And I just want to reiterate everything that Dr. Dixon said. I think he hit it spot on in his last response. I think the first thing is that there's obviously an negative overrepresentation of African Americans in the news cycle, and what we need to do is to really have a diverse representation of our accurate portrayals of us in the media, in the stories that are being told in the news cycle. And I think when we see more of those accurate representations, we'll see some of the issues and the challenges and the conversations that we've been having today elevated and both alleviated. And so I think that's the first thing. And just to reiterate some of the research that Dr. Dixon has done, just the fact that, you know, we are still having to see a lot of these things and really need to find ways to address it, and we highlight those ways and recommendations in the report. So just want to thank you, Brian, for having us on today, for taking the lead as a news organization to integrate and raise these issues on your show today. I think it's very critical as part of the work that we're trying to support and get out there.
And I'll also add to the caller, Fred, who's a black father, deconstructing the media and that active watching, as you were saying, Professor Dixon, that white parents need to do the same thing when it comes
absolutely
to race, and
yes,
not think
absolutely
like that's somebody
agree
else's problem. So I'll just, as a white parent, I'll just throw that in. Travis
I
Dixon,
agree,
media effects scholar and professor of communication at the University of Illinois. Rashid Shabazz, Color of Change, chief marketing and storytelling officer. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.